Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori and me, will invite a bookish guest to share their favorite book recommendation. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Ellie. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thanks so much for having me back.
So happy to have you back. So tell us what you've been up to since you've been on the show.
Well, I was trying to think. I think it's been like almost 2 years since I was on the show, which is crazy because I feel like it's been 10, maybe 15. maybe like 8 of those 10 or 15 years have been spent in quarantine, but who's counting? since I was on the show last, I've kept freelancing. That's my day job. So I work for a lot of different clients. And then my podcast has kept rolling. So I think when I was on the first time, I was probably within just like a couple of months of starting my book podcast. And you really like sort of helped me enter the world of book podcasting, which I so appreciate. And I'm still going. We release our 108th episode next week. So triple digits feels pretty good. And then like as far as other, I guess, kind of cool things, I moved in the middle of quarantine, which is something you and I have in common. We both left New York not in the middle. You left before, but I left. I live in Philadelphia now, and I'm starting my MFA program in creative writing in a couple of weeks. So I'm hoping to be able to like reprioritize some of my own creative writing. And I don't know, obviously the ultimate goal is to join the list of our favorite authors someday. So everybody send me all your good writing vibes.
I love it. It's so amazing, those changes. Moving, school, podcasting, growing, it's a lot of changes.
So many changes, but you too. I mean, we were just talking about that before we started recording. It's just a time of a lot of crazy transitions.
Yeah, I think the pandemic is just like speed it up or something. It was like, okay, it's happening, you know?
Yeah.
Just might as well. Like, you only live once. You might as well just do it as opposed to wait for the right time.
Yeah, I just felt like I needed a fresh start. I don't know. And I got one. So I'm just trying to enjoy it and ease my way in as best as I can in quarantine.
I love this. So now let's talk about childhood nostalgia and books. What inspired you to start this podcast?
A couple of things. So I started thinking about the podcast in like the fall of 2017. So I'd been freelancing full time at that point for a little over a year. And I talk about this a lot, but I think one of the sort of misconceptions about freelancing or like, I don't know, just being a creative entrepreneur is that often you think that you're going to not have to work for anybody ever again. But honestly, at least in the freelance world, you sort of just end up working for a lot more people in sort of shorter spurts of time and for individual projects. And so after my first year of freelancing, I realized like, I feel like I need to have something that I have ownership of. Like, I want to create something from the ground up. I want to be my own boss at something. And so I started brainstorming like different ideas, and I had gotten really into podcasts around this time, especially when I made the decision to quit my full-time corporate job. I'd listened to a lot of sort of like motivational, like entrepreneurial podcasts. So that had been really motivating for me. And so I thought that I could probably come up with some kind of a podcast. And I combined my previous work history working in children's publishing with just kind of my like lifelong interest in pop culture and in the way that different kinds of pop culture can intersect with our politics and our worldview and like all of these other things. And the SSR podcast was born. So it was lots of different threads that kind of pulled together. And as you know, starting a podcast is a lot of work and you do a lot of learning on the go and sort of on your feet. So it took a while for it to sort of develop into what it is now, but those are sort of like the seeds of inspiration that brought me here.
What has been the most surprising thing about having a podcast that you discover by doing this work?
About having a podcast, I think one of the most surprising things about having a podcast sort of more generally is that like you can teach yourself to do almost anything. Like, I don't know if you found that, but I think just being like an independent creator, you realize that, like, if you want to get something done, you have to do it yourself, and you want to do it as inexpensively and as conveniently and with as minimal technology as possible. And often that's not possible. Often you have to have more technology. But for me, having a podcast has sort of, like, empowered me to, I hate to say, get out of my comfort zone, because that feels like such a cliche. And I don't know that it's necessarily a comfort zone thing, but I think it's just empowered me to, like, figure things out on the fly that I never would have thought that I knew that I would learn how to do some of the things that I know how to do now because of my podcast. And I also think that it's made me more comfortable talking to people because, and you, again, I would imagine you feel the same way. I studied journalism in college, but one of the reasons that I didn't take sort of a traditional, like, newspaper reporter track was because interviewing people made me so nervous. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't like the idea of, like, running up to people in the middle of a public street and asking them if they would talk to me. Obviously, podcasting is not that, but that was a part of the journalism world that I really struggled with initially. And it's been really nice to realize that, like, I'm a lot more comfortable talking to people, even people that I don't know, even people that I have to talk about, like, super heavy issues with, than I maybe would have thought. Do you feel that way? Like, do you feel like it's made you more comfortable?
Yeah, it did. I think for me, it made me more comfortable making friends and connecting new people. Like, that was, like, a big part of it. Like, actually, I realized that since I moved to Chicago, I needed to, like, find new community because my friends are in New York. Well, they left New York, but they were in New York.
Nobody's in New York anymore.
Yeah. And so for me, during the pandemic, like, the podcast, because I've been doing this for so long, I feel more comfortable reaching out to people and say, hey, do you want to hang out? Do you want to chat over Zoom? You know, because I've been doing this for 2 years, like, it's comfortable enough to say that. And so I'm comfortable doing interviews and just going on the fly. Like, I think the more I do them, the easier it gets. Like, I'm not struggling with trying to figure out how to do it perfectly. Like, there's a letting go of that process of just trusting that you'll know what the next right question will be.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it, because I sometimes feel like when I'm in, like, a normal real life conversation, it's so awkward when there's, like, that lag in the conversation. And we, I'm sure, have both experienced that lag when you're doing a podcast recording, which is so not a good thing. But I've gotten better at, like, jumping in and kind of, like, fixing that. So I feel like that's carried over to my personal life a little bit. And that's surprising, because I didn't really think about that as a side effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gotta love podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about, you know, your conversations, because you do talk about, you revisit books from the past, books that we read 10, 20, even 30 years ago, and try to see if they stand up to the test of time. You have heavy conversations about, you know, heavy topics like race, age, and all these different things. So what has been some of the most surprising aspects of these conversations? Is it the process of revisiting the books, or is it just talking about the topics and how they are dealt in the present time while they were dealt in the past?
I don't know that I would say it's surprising, but I think that one of the things that I've struggled with the most, especially over the last couple of weeks and the last couple of months, is just how white the publishing industry is. Mm-hmm. And I've spent a lot of time this summer, especially reflecting on how I want to evolve the podcast and sort of take a more actively anti-racist position in the way that I talk about books, in the way that I plan my show. And what was tricky is that because I look at older books, the best option for me was not to diversify the kinds of authors that we talk about, because that diversity, whether we like it or not, just doesn't really exist in these, like, super old titles. I mean, the publishing industry is still super white. We're still, as a book community, asking for diverse books. So looking at these books that were written not only in, like, the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, but, like, all the way back in the 19th century, I just don't have as many diverse authors to pull from. Mm-hmm. So for me, what's been surprising and challenging is kind of having to be creative with the way that I address these changes and these different kinds of conversations that we're having in 2020, thankfully. But I think it's been, it's just been tricky. And it's been, I think, something that a lot of the other like book podcasts, book bloggers, book reviewers that I engage with, like maybe haven't had to contend with as much because they are dealing with more like contemporary books. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just been like a unique challenge. I don't know if that counts as a surprise, but I guess it is sort of surprising when I look around me and I sort of try to observe what all these other awesome book lovers are doing to adapt and to rise to the occasion in these times. Like, I had to sort of step back and be like, okay, like, this is not how I'm going to be able to do it. I'm going to have to think about something different. And so that has been a surprise to me over the last couple of months specifically, which has been interesting. And I'm really excited for sort of my go forward plan. And I feel really good about the direction that the podcast is going to be taking, just kind of in terms of like the questions that I plan to be asking and the conversations that I plan to be having and kind of like the more direct manner I want to take in talking about issues of race specifically. And then I would say just in terms of like what's been most surprising about these books in general is like I find that it's sort of like either the books read and they're so lovely and they're so nostalgic and they're so beautiful and my guests and I both feel that way, or it's like totally on the other end of the spectrum. Like, there's rarely a gray area in between. It's usually one or the other.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, I revisited a couple of books and I was like, yeah, they don't stand the test of time, you know?
Yeah.
There's nostalgia. There's like a sense of like, you know, the time. Like, that was just the book that I knew to read, you know, so.
Yeah, and it's hard to contend with that because it feels crummy to be like, oh, this was a book that meant so much to me and now I'm coming back to it and there are these things about it that are so terrible, or things about like the author that I didn't know that are really upsetting, or things that I just didn't understand about the context in which the book was written that I can look back now and be like, that's super problematic. And so I think just like constantly navigating through my feelings about how maybe those things can exist at the same time, but how I also in 2020 can now take the opportunity to like point out these problems and explain why, even though I maybe loved it then, there are things that are really important that we speak out about now. I think cancel culture is like a whole other subject for a whole other podcast, but I think I didn't realize that I would be like kind of playing in that space when I started the podcast. Like, I thought I was just going to talk about books, but because we're dealing in some really like big name authors in some really like beloved books, beloved franchises, beloved series and characters, like, it's kind of inevitable that this cancel culture stuff comes up now and then. And I was not expecting that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fascinating. I think you can see it. It's like, it's happening every single day. So
yeah.
All right, let's talk about book recommendations. Let's talk about YA middle grade titles from the 90s and 00s or the aughts. Which title would you recommend, and what titles are problematic to revisit?
Okay, so I have a couple. I made a list because I didn't want to miss out on anything. So in terms of books that I would recommend for a revisit, we just did an episode on Catherine Called Birdie, which was a really interesting reread, and I think has really shocked a lot of my listeners because it digs into a lot more heavy issues than I think any of us remember. So while I wouldn't recommend that as that one is like a fun read, I would say that if you really want to come back to a book that won't take you very long to get through because it's only like 200 pages or so, but will kind of open your eyes to like a whole other side of Kidlit that maybe you didn't realize when you were a kid yourself, I recommend that one. Also, Speak by Laurie Halse Anderson is a fascinating and beautiful and heartbreaking book that I think should never, ever go away. If you want something a little bit lighter, I would say that The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants and The Princess Diaries mostly hold up. There are a couple of things that I didn't love, but I think that I can safely say that they still have a special place in my heart. Weetzy Bat is a really cool book from the, I believe, early aughts by Francesca Leah Block. And I didn't know much about this book before. It's really short. I promise you can finish it in like an hour and a half. And it's this really interesting examination of like found families and gender and identity. And the language in it is just like out of control beautiful. So those are some that I would recommend. Also, Perks of Being a Wallflower was a fascinating reread for me because I think a lot of it went over my head when I was a teenager and read it myself. So that's a nice one to come back to, especially because the writing is so good. And I'm sorry, I just recommended so many. I just can't help myself.
I love this. And any problematic ones?
Oh my gosh, there's so many, but I'll keep it to two. Because otherwise I'll like get up on a soapbox and neither of us wants that right now. So one that comes to mind from the more recent batch of episodes that I've released is the book Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging.
Okay.
Which I thought was like really rebellious of me to read when I was a teenager, just because of the title alone. And I really kind of hated reading it as an adult. And I have a really interesting conversation with my guest about it, because even though she recognized a lot of the problematic moments in it, she still thought that it was like fun to reread. And I had trouble connecting with that. So that for me was really problematic. And then I recently reread the first book in the Series of Unfortunate Events series. And that episode hasn't dropped yet as we're talking, but I really struggled with that one too, and I was expecting to enjoy it because I loved the series as a kid, but it's super dark, and so that was a hard one for me to get through too.
I feel And I would say Sweet Valley High.
Oh yeah.
It's just problematic. I'm sorry.
Top to bottom. I mean, I don't even know where to start. Like, misogyny, lack of empathy, super cavalier treatment of, like, heavy topics. I mean, it goes on and on. I wish I could say that it held up. I will say that they're quick books. They're fun rereads in that, like, again, you can finish them in a couple of hours and you'll laugh because it's so ridiculous, but there's just like a lot of upsetting stuff in there.
Yes, I agree. Awesome. So let's see. Babysitter's Club got a revamp of a new series, audiobooks, and Netflix show. That's a series staying the test of time.
Well, did you watch the Netflix adaptation?
I did, and it was fantastic. It was phenomenal.
It's so good.
So good.
Listeners, if you have not watched it, I'm not going to tell you to stop listening to us because I want you to keep listening to us, but, like, as soon as you're done, you need to go watch it because it's so good. So I had done a couple of Babysitter's Club episodes of the podcast before this sort of renewed Babysitter's Club moment happened. So I think at this point we've done, like, six Babysitter's Club episodes, so we've jumped around in the series. And even before the adaptation or the Netflix show came out, I felt like for the most part the series stood up. I think the difference between the Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley High, I mean, there's a lot of differences, but as far as I can see it as in terms of how they age, the Sweet Valley girls are so much older. They're in high school, so they're dealing with different kinds of issues that I think get a little bit dicier. In terms of, like, how they're portrayed back then versus now. The Babysitter's Club girls are, like, 12 and 13. So there's an innocence to them that I think makes it a little bit easier to age. And it, like, preserves this, like, warm, fuzzy feeling that maybe Sweet Valley doesn't have so much. I mean, there are some goofy moments in those books. There are some things that just feel, like, very dated. And I don't know. You'll be like, were these cool? Like, I don't, was this cool when I read it? But I think that they generally aren't problematic. The biggest issue with the books is that there's this significant lack of diversity in the books, which Netflix has addressed in the reboot. And I think that what I appreciated the most about the Netflix series was that it preserves a lot of the character of the series. Sort of like the core heart and soul of the series. The characters themselves feel very much the same, but they somehow were able to bring it up to date as far as technology, and again to include more BIPOC actresses so that there's more diversity among the club members. And I think the fact that they were able to strike that balance proves that, like, this series is not going anywhere and it does age well. And that made me extremely happy because I was going to be heartbroken if I found out otherwise.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I watched this series in an afternoon. Like, I was talking to Estelle, who's a publicity's contact for Forever Romance, and we're talking about Babysitter's Club. And she's like, I'm trying to savor. And I was like, probably I'm just going to binge it. And so I spent the whole afternoon just watching it, and it was just so good. It was so wholesome, and it was just like it was just like a feel good series where it didn't drain you. It nourished you.
That's a great way to put it. It totally nourished me, especially right now. I kind of did like a mixture of savoring it and binging it. We stretched it out over, I think, like 2 or 3 weekends, but we would watch like 4 episodes at a time, and then we would take a break. I say we because I got my husband into it, and he like loved it, which was fun. But yeah, I think like it nourished me in 2020, but I also felt like I recognized everyone and everything in it, which I think is such a hard line to walk. Mm-hmm. And I think just speaks to the fact that, like, yes, even though it's not a perfect series, there is a timeless quality to it, and that it just felt really good to see that.
Yeah, it was just really good. And I followed the books. I felt like it followed the books fairly good. Like, it just, I think I remember reading the books and being like, oh, I remember that, or I remember that. And it's still updated to today's society where things are, you know, there's cell phones, there's all the other communication, there's social media. Things that didn't happen in the 90s when I was reading those books, so.
Yeah, I can't wait for future seasons, which I'm assuming that they're going to be made. I mean, I don't know how COVID has affected the schedule, but I am at the edge of my seat waiting for more episodes.
Me too. So what have been some of the best books you pick up again if you need to pick me up?
Again, I have a list because I have this huge like wall in my office that just has, I'm a very neat person generally, but my podcast book stacks are a mess because I'm just constantly pulling things on and off of them. So I had to like look at them and just, I try to be like, okay, what are all the books I need to recommend? So The Westing Game is really fun, especially for people who are mystery readers. I loved coming back to that. My husband came back to that also. After I recommended it to him, he thought it was a really fun adult read. I also am really into books that have like a million different characters that are all connected in interesting ways, and The Westing Game is a great example of that. Ella Enchanted is a really fun callback. I know that the movie is terrible, but the book that led to the movie is really good, and I enjoyed coming back to that. Charlotte's Web is like the sweetest, like simplest kid's story. That's a little younger, of course, but if you just kind of want to be reminded of, like, the goodness of the world, that's a nice one, although it probably will make you cry. Mm-hmm. I am a fan of Stargirl. I know that that has sort of had a recent resurgence, too, because there's a Disney Plus movie, which I have not watched yet, but I love Stargirl. For some reason, I have 2 copies of it, and I'm not sure why, but I think it's a really beautiful story. I love Jerry Spinelli's writing in that book, and I love the characters. So that, I think, is a nice revisit, too. And then I'll reiterate, Princess Diaries and Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, while not perfect, will definitely give you a little pick-me-up if you need it.
I love this. So you have read some contemporary or new YA reads. What are some of their newer recommendations?
So in the last couple of weeks, I read They Wish They Were Us by Jessica Goodman. Have you read this?
No, actually, I bought it, so.
You need to read it. It's so good. I had Jess on the podcast recently, and I'm not just saying this because I had her on the show. The book was amazing, and it's going to be made into a TV show, so everybody, like, needs to get caught up on the reading now. It's excellent. It's, like, everything you loved about reading YA when you were a teen, if you're not somebody that reads YA as an adult. And yet it has this, like, adult contemporary quality. It's just so good, and everybody has to read it. And then both of the Novembers that I've had on the podcast so far, we've done New Reads November, and Laura, you were actually a guest in my very first New Reads November, and I was reflecting on my favorite books from each of those, like, New Reads November series. And I think the book we talked about, When Dimple Met Rishi, was my favorite of that New Reads November round. I loved that book.
I love it, too. Did you read the other books in the series? I know there's 2 more books, but I haven't read them.
So. I haven't either because, as you might be able to imagine from, there's no end to the podcast reading. But I would like to read them, and I love the covers.
The covers are so pretty. Yeah. They're, like, fun. They're, like, I don't know, diverse reads. So
yeah, I loved that one. And then last year for New Reads November, my favorite book was Frankly in Love by David Yoon. Would highly recommend that one. Also a diverse read, really interesting, like, cultural commentary and commentary on the immigrant experience, and also, like, a really beautiful teen love story and some interesting, like, family love stories, too, which is always nice to read about in a teen book.
I love this. All right, so, Ali, you love character-driven novels, which is your one polar opposite. What have been some of the best books you've read over the past couple of years that you recommend?
So recently in this category, I would say that All Adults Here by Emma Straub is a great one. That book I feel like was written just for me. It has all of these characters with all of these crazy stories. I love a family story, and that's what you get in All Adults Here. Plus, the writing is great. I think it's Emma Straub's best book yet, so I highly recommend that. It's totally worth the Bookstagram hype, and it also has a great cover that looks great on Bookstagram. My favorite book of last year was Clara Lombardo's The Most Fun We Ever Had, and I think that that might end up being, like, I feel like that might end up in my, like, top five of the last, like, 5 years. Like, I absolutely loved that book. I ate it up. I can't wait to reread it. It's super long. Have you read that one? Mm-mm. It's, like,
I'm intimidated by the size.
I know. It is worth it. I know it's maybe not your vibe because we're opposite readers, but it's so good.
Okay.
It's about four sisters. I have a lot of sisters. I reread Little Women every year, so it, like, spoke to my soul at that level. And you get the perspective of each sister, you get the perspective of the parents, and it's just, it's really beautiful. One of my favorite authors in this space, and he hasn't put anything out in the last couple of years, but I'm a big fan of Jonathan Franzen's work. He always has a million characters. Freedom and The Corrections, more specifically, are two of my favorites. And I also really loved Jasmine Guillory's Party of Two, which I read recently. It's not, like, that many characters, but it was, like, the characters that she had and that she was playing with I thought were really fantastic. And I think that's my favorite of her books so far.
Okay. That's the one book that I have not read from her, so.
It's the best.
I own it.
I can't wait to hear what you think when you read it.
Yeah. So what are you some most anticipated new releases for 2020 that you're looking forward?
So I'm really bad at, like, looking forward to new releases because I feel like I just get distracted by shiny things all the time.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm not a good person to ask about, like, future 2020 releases. Maybe that makes me, like, a really bad, like, book podcaster. But for a while, for the first part of the year, my most anticipated read of 2020 was Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld, which I've now read. But I would say, like, heading into the new year, that was my most anticipated read. And to be fair, it was meant to come out later in the summer, so I was really thinking I would have more time to, like, get pumped up for it. And she ended up releasing it early. So, I can't say that I have, like, one or two in particular that I'm most excited for in 2020 because there's just, like, I feel like every week there's another thing that I'm anticipating more than I was anticipating something else the week before.
Yep. So what was your experience reading Rodham?
So mixed. It was so mixed. So I love Curtis Sittenfeld, and so it, like, breaks my heart into a million tiny pieces to say that I didn't love it as much as I thought that I would. I think I also just had super high expectations.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the weirdest thing about it was just the blurred lines between fact and fiction. Like, I really struggled with this revised history of Hillary Rodham's life. And it sounds so stupid, but, like, the very steamy scenes between a college-aged Hillary and a college-aged Bill Clinton, it really, like, I struggled with it. It made me very confused. It made me, like, kind of uncomfortable because these are two real people who live very public lives, who live very complicated public lives. And I don't know. I like, got stuck in my head about it. Did you read Rodham?
No, but I heard the reviews and I heard, like, the whole steamy, sexy times. And I was like, I don't know if I feel like it. I think I have no problem with sexy times or re-romans, but I feel like when it comes to literary fiction, it just becomes really weird. Like, I don't want my literary fiction to have sexy times. That's just, like, I'm like, I look for sexy times in romans because I know how to write it. Like, that's the other part. It's like, yeah.
Well, I feel like Curtis Enfeldt can write a really good sexy time. Like, Prep is one of my favorite books of all time, and she writes a bunch of, like, sort of more awkward sex scenes in that book. But I don't know. It was just, I couldn't get over the fact that, like, these are real people, but we're kind of pretending that they're not, but they are. I struggled with it. And I have to think that she must have struggled writing it, too. Must have just been a very weird experience.
Yeah. Did you read American Wife?
Yes, I love that book.
Okay. Because that's based on Laura Bush. So I was like, oh, is it different? Or
I think it just felt like somehow it felt less immediate. I read it. I'm trying to think when. I guess I read it maybe shortly after college or in college. I also don't think that wasn't as steamy, I don't think.
I don't think so, yeah.
I don't remember that being as sexy. And I'm also not as, like, admittedly, I'm not as protective of Laura Bush as I am of Hillary. So, I don't know. I was, like, feeling hard for Hillary. And I wonder, like, how the real-life Hillary feels about that book.
Yeah. That's a curious, just curious to see if Hillary read the book and be like, oh, I don't know how I feel about
it. Yeah, I mean, but, like, what if Curtis Sittenfeld's got everything right? Like, what if Hillary was like, yeah, this is actually how it all went down? Like, that would be weird. But it was just a weird reading experience. I know I saw a lot of reviews that the writing wasn't great. I thought the writing was good. I think Curtis Sittenfeld is an amazing writer. It just, for me, was, like, a bizarre experience.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So which books have you read in the past few months do you recommend?
Okay, Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid.
Okay.
So good. I read that. I was lucky enough to get an advance of that one, and I read it on a big trip we took in November, back when people could go on trips. And I read it in one day, and then I was sad that it was over. Mm-hmm. And then I kept thinking about it for days on end. So I want to go back to that book, I think, especially now that it's been almost a year, and we all have learned so much. Mm-hmm. About race and the way that we treat each other in that time. So I'd like to go back to it with a renewed sense of, like, understanding, hopefully. That's an amazing book. I just read Self Care by Lee Stein. I read that and it was the most fun I've had all summer, I think, which sort of tells you, like, how boring all of our summers have been. But sitting and reading that book in one day was I could not stop talking about what a good time I had. I was like, this is the best day I've had in so long. My family was laughing at me, but I'm not going to say I laughed, I cried, because I didn't cry, but I had that feeling of, like, this has given me the full breadth of emotions in one day. So that's really fun and funny and also very quick. And then The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. I'm not the first one to sing that book's praises. It's amazing. I loved The Mothers, Britt Bennett's last novel, and I was a sort of early champion of that book, but The Vanishing Half I thought was even better and just has such an interesting premise, so I've been recommending that to everybody, too. Although nobody needs me to recommend that book. Everybody's recommending that book.
I love this. And, well, Such a Fun Age is set in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So it might be a fun thing to revisit. We're like, hey, I know this part. Or
yeah. That's so true, because I had, like, a general sense of where they were, but now I'm sort of, like, a little bit more embedded in things, slowly but surely. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I love that book.
Awesome. So what book's on your TBR?
Or what book isn't on my TBR is the question, you know? Okay, so some things that come to mind immediately. I just started Hood Feminism, which okay. I'm excited about. And also, Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? That's not a new book, but it's a book that I've really been excited to read, and I had some trouble tracking it down. So that's on my shelf. Also, Cleo McDougall Regrets Nothing. I just got my copy of that in the mail. And my friend lent me The Leavers by Lisa Coe, and I'm not that familiar with it, but she had the most amazing things to say, so that will probably be on my short list. And then I have a NetGalley stack that I really need to get to, and the one that I'm most excited about from NetGalley right now is a book called Cobble Hill by Cecily von Zygesar, who is the author of Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
And I lived in Cobble Hill in Brooklyn for a long time. I know next to nothing about the book, but when I saw it come up in NetGalley, I was like, praying to the NetGalley gods that I would get approved for it, and I did, and so now I actually have to read it, but I can't wait.
Yeah, I got that book too. I got the publisher send it to me, like, send me a widget, and I was like, it's Gossip Girl in Brooklyn.
I can't wait. I can't wait. Have you read it yet?
No, I'm not.
Okay, we should read it and talk about it.
Yeah, we should. So, I was like, okay, count me in.
Sounds creepy. I'm like, also, where has she been for all these years? I'm just so glad that this is what she's coming back with.
Yeah, so awesome. So tell us where you can find you online.
You can find me mostly on Instagram at SSRPod. I'm also on Twitter at SSRPod. And then you can find me and the podcast on Facebook by searching the SSR Podcast. We have new episodes every Tuesday, and you can find the show on pretty much all of your go-to podcatchers, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and I'd love to have you join the SSR family. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thank you, Allie, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always in the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.